But his conception of continued growth is fine.
Sure, except that every so often, the deities put the whole thing back in the hopper and melt it up and start over again. It's the at the end of a universe age, everything comes to an end. There is no such thing as eternal life, just long life.
What was the name again, Bill? Cosmo?
Cosmo Conception by Max Heindel.
But who is Max?
25 years ago, and you guys are quizzing me. I can't pass the test in algebra either. No, I dug into this many years ago and dropped it.
Yeah, but the point I'm making, or the point that I see, who is Max Heindel? I think he's just a human. And when I look at the Urantia book or show it to anyone else, what does it say about the table of contents and mm-hmm. the show of this? Well, isn't there a great difference there?
Sure.
And I want to know if there's any other book that you know that has authors like the Urantia book.
The Book of Mormon, written by the angel Moroni.
Yeah.
I oftentimes, when they get me down into who wrote this book,
yeah.
I read them the signature at the end of paper one,
yeah.
written by a divine counselor, where it says, many times have I enjoyed the pleasure of a sojourn in the personal presence of the Universal Father. I portray the nature and attributes of God with unchallengeable authority. I know whereof I speak.
And not only that, but there's a biography of all those
yeah.
Right.
Sure. The authorship of this book does not straddle the issue. At the same time, this book is the first of its kind in disclaiming infallibility. Well, this is an important quote. For 1008, page 1008. Gee, I wish we did have 1,008 papers.
We only have more unorganized.
Yes. Read what it says to has to say about the Urantia papers. This is their comment about these papers. In paragraph 3 on page 1008. It just says, it's not final and complete. It's not verbally inspired.
It's not what?
It's not verbally inspired. And that's a very sophisticated statement. No revelation, short of the attainment of the Universal Father, can ever be complete. All others are no more than partial, transient, and practically adapted to local conditions. While such admissions as this may possibly detract from the immediate force and authority of all revelations, the time has arrived when it's advisable to make such frank statements, even at the risk of weakening the future influence and authority of this, the most recent of the revelations of truth. How the devil can anything be final when language is evolving, and they're limited by the English language? Merman? No, you aren't. This is the time for translation. However, check with the foundation and get their approval. They own the copyright.
Well, it would be under their sponsorship.
Correct. I think this is excellent. I think it's excellent. This is the time for translation.
What is your
head right into the
one at a time. I think it's grand. I think it's grand. It's one of the big languages. Of course, I've always kidded and said,
you're into the biggest opposition, Bill, aren't you, in the Catholic Church?
You've also got a strong secularist, anti-Catholic movement in Latin America. I've lived there. Bob?
I have a cousin that just...
I lived for 3.5 years in Latin America, and I will confirm what you say.
We were there 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Was there a flicker of a hand over here?
tied up with many Indian customs, too, throughout.
If you get far enough in the hinterland, you can run out of Spanish back in the woods. I've done it.
I have, too. If you want...
I like to read, in dealing with these papers, if I read the signature at the end of paper one, I like to follow it with this quote from 1008. The signature at the end of paper one is chill steel in confidence. And here on paper, page 1008, you find humility. Well, shall we proceed onward into part four? Part four is the longest part, but we are going to spend the least time on it in our seminar. Not because it is least important by any means, but I believe because we encounter the fewest comprehension problems. Am I right? Does anyone here really have any real trouble with any large part of part four? Personally, when Jesus talks to the philosopher at Athens, he gets a little erudite. But for the most part, the narrative is a sweet narrative, isn't it? When baby Ruth stands outside the carpenter shop and eggs on one of her playmates to go in and pester Joshua, who's hard at work, until he, you know, they said, Uncle Joshua, come out and tell us a big story. And he wasn't such a stuffed shirt that he couldn't take time off for the kids. And so he perches out there on a rock outside the carpenter shop with a couple of youngsters on each knee and the rest of them around him in a semicircle, and they're fascinated by his expressionful voice and features as he tells them a big story. This is not the problem of the unqualified absolute. This is a darn sweet human picture, isn't it? You see, there's more truth in part four. There's more facts in the first three. And truth is always easier to comprehend than fact. You need me least in part four. You need me most in the first three parts. Are you with me? All right. Let's consider part four. I have elected to divide part four into four major groups. And you might say to me, gee, Bill, why do you separate B and C? You split his public work right in the middle. Well, I split it because if you don't split it, it's such a darn big section. And I've got some reason for dividing it in the middle. I think before the Transfiguration, he emphasized his role as the Son of Man. After the Transfiguration, he boldly proclaimed himself the Son of God. It's the same story pitched in a different key. And so I elect to divide Michael's bestowal into two halves. His public work, I mean. Pre-Transfiguration and post-Transfiguration. And of course, that leaves the beginning and the end. You start out with his private life as Joshua ben Joseph, and after the public career is his post-mortal existence, his Maranatha life, and the finale, what happened after Jesus left. Going back to the beginning of part four, I think his mortal career falls into three logical groupings. First of all, there are three introductions to this part of the Urantia book. There is the cosmic introduction, there is the environmental introduction, and there is the familial introduction. The cosmic introduction is the bestowal charge imparted by Emmanuel of Salvington, which gives you the broad picture of the purpose and the intent of the bestowal. What he should do, what he should not do, what his privileges are as a paradise son on a bestowal mission, what his limitations are. You see, I think all of these higher beings have to be careful. They not only dare not thwart the purpose of the Universal Father in bestowing personality with its free will endowment, they've also got to worry about the Supreme Being. I think this universe is a living organism. If I were to choose between comparing the cosmos to a mechanism and an organism, I'd pick organism. Because there's much that's mechanical about an organism, too, you know? What could be more mechanical than the hinge of the elbow, you know? But there is life there. This grand universe, in a sense, is an organic living whole. In a sense, it is the organic, it is the universe organism of the Supreme Being. He permeates it. He's not omnipresent. That's a function of the second floor. Omnipresence, along with omniscience and omnipotence, is a second floor function. But on the first floor, he is ubiquitous, which means multi-present. It's a good English word. We were harassed by the ubiquitous enemy. You know, as Custer's famous last words, where the hell are all these Indians coming from? The Indians were ubiquitous. They were all over. The very nature of the Supreme Being is evolutionary. And I think you interfere with normal evolution at your peril. Now, if you interfere with evolution, does the Supreme Being sit up somewhere in Havana, looking down malevolently upon you as an interloper and saying, I'll fix his clock? No, I don't think it's anything like that. Let's go back to organism. Many human reactions are on the level of spinal reflexes. If you hit a knee joint in just the right way, the kick is quite involuntary, isn't it? If somebody shakes pepper near your nose, you don't say, aha, pepper. It would be natural for me in my living condition of protoplasmic irritability to sneeze. The sneeze is quite involuntary, isn't it? I think whenever normal evolution is interfered with, what you're up against is a spinal reflex in the Supreme Being. A not altogether voluntary act on his part, designed to preserve and conserve the evolutionary purpose of time and space. And that's why I think a bestowal son has to be very careful what he does and does not do, lest he trigger a spinal reflex in the Supreme Being. Are you with me? That's why planetary administrators can't arbitrarily interfere with the course of human events, lest they trigger a response in the Supreme Being. That's why I think whenever you get involved, I'm going to give you a concept of reverse English providence, which you may not like too well. I think whenever you get involved with something like the Urantia book, or as the apostles did with Jesus, I think it adds to the problems of life rather than subtracting from them. Because the more you are given, I think the more will be asked of you. And I ask you this question. Did the apostles live a life of ease because of knowing Jesus? What was their fate? Not many died a natural death, did they? They died magnificently, but it took a lot of courage. Jesus, knowing Jesus, increased their temporal problems, not their spiritual problems. This is reverse English providence, just the opposite of the heron folk or the chosen people concept. Same idea, chosen people, heron folk. So, fellow sufferers, the more you have of this book, the more you get out of it, the more is apt to be required of you. I go back to the parable of the talents. When this big shot left various sums of money with his vice presidents, he required each an accounting in proportion to the trust he left with them, right? And what happened to the character that stuck his in the ground? There's a thing called termination. They fired him and he got no severance pay. I think this is why a creator son, as a bestowal son, listens to the Trinity ambassador. He is attempting to come down here and operate in compliance with universal law in such a way as to avoid triggering repercussive responses in the Supreme Being. I think the Supreme Being is the voluntary, semi-voluntary, and involuntary guardian of the evolutionary path of experiential progression. Do you remember what the assigned sentinel on Salvington advised at the time of the Lucifer Rebellion? He said, look, if you try to stamp this out arbitrarily by fiat and a show of force, this whole system may be permanently quarantined against the paradise of sin. This has appeared by natural cause. You've got to let it run its natural course. Fellow Urantians, what we've got here is the sweetest religion ever presented to mortal man, and the toughest. I'm an ex-Marine. I know what Paris Island is like, and I highly approve of it. And I think that's exactly why they make this planet tough. I don't hold with drinking vodka on duty. Off duty is an entirely different question, if you like vodka. The fact remains, what they're trying to do is to teach you how to stay alive under difficult circumstances. And that's why they run this planet the way they run this planet. Because, quote, semi-quote, long before we get to Havona, we have learned to feast on uncertainty. This is not on this world, this is the Marantian spiritual ascent. Fatten on disappointment. Enthuse over apparent defeat. Invigorate in the presence of difficulties. And exhibit indomitable courage when confronted with the inexplicable. Long since our battle cry has become, in liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing is impossible. Cry truth, if I stay with this long enough, I'll sound like Mrs. James, won't I? This is the kind of a rugged deal that we're up against. And believe me, it's just tough enough, so I think a lot of conventional Christians, when they wake up on the mansion worlds, are going to think they're in hell. You know?
Or purgatory.
Or purgatory, yeah. You know, I've used this illustration. There's a time and place for bedwetting, but it's not in college. And if you wake up there as a spiritual bedwetter, it's going to be a humiliating experience, isn't it? Well, if this is what we're in preparation for, you can see why the Supreme Being so jealously guards the evolutionary process. And you can see why an attempt to short-circuit it, as Caligastia did here, brings about almost instantaneous holocaust. Instead of a new surge of civilization, what happens? Within a generation, the rebellious members of the prince's staff are manning the battlements of Dalmatia, defending the city against the assault of the outlying tribes. Well, the second introduction is, what was this world like when Michael bestowed himself here? And the third introduction, the birth and infancy of Jesus, is really, who were his folks? What was the immediate environment? What was it like to be a citizen of the Commonwealth of Israel in the first century AD? Who were Joseph and Mary like? What was this culture into which Michael was born? And then we have a group of papers which, to me, extremely interesting, the story of how he grew up. Wonderful story of a little boy